The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and also from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. And the first article that I'm going to read is called Research We're Watching. This comes from the Harvard Heart Letter of November 2024. The first small section is entitled, Eating More Plant-Based Fat May Help Your Heart. In a study that spanned more than two decades, people whose diets favored plant-based fat lived longer than those who ate more animal-based fat. The same distinction appears specifically for deaths from heart disease. People analyzed data from more than 400,000 adults over a 24-year period. People who ate the most plant-based fat, especially from grains and vegetable oils, had 14% lower odds of dying of heart disease in that time compared to people who consumed the least plant-based fat. In contrast, people who ate the most animal-based fat, including fat from dairy products and eggs, were 14% more likely to die from cardiovascular causes than those who took in the least animal fat. Replacing just 5% of calories from animal fats with plant fats could reduce heart-related death by as much as 30%. The findings were published online August 12, 2024, by JAMA Internal Medicine. The next short article is called Psychological Factors Can Improve Heart Disease Risk Calculations. An online tool to predict heart disease risk called Life's Essential 8 weighs a set of traditional risk factors. A new study suggests that considering mental health might make the tool more accurate. Published in the August 2024 issue of JACC Advances, the study included more than 21,000 adults who participated in a nationwide health survey beginning in 2011. Psychological health was assessed based on two-question depression screening tests. Having a high versus a low LE8 score was linked to a 68% lower risk of dying from a heart-related cause. But when the score was enhanced with the depression screening results, the association was even stronger, a 77% lower risk of heart-related death. One limitation of the study is the lack of accounting for other measures of psychological health, including stress and anxiety, as well as positive factors like gratitude and optimism that are also known to influence heart health. Still, their findings support a possible future update to LEA8 to encompass psychological health and well-being, perhaps known as Life's Necessary 9. Finally, short bursts of intense exercise may benefit stroke survivors. For stroke survivors, high-intensity interval training may boost fitness more than moderate-intensity workouts. The study included 82 people who had a stroke between 6 months and 5 years earlier. Researchers randomly assigned them to one of two exercise regimens. Both were done on recumbent step machines 3 days per week. One group alternated between 1 minute of high-intensity exercise and 1 minute of low-intensity exercise for 19 minutes. The other group did 20 to 30 minutes of steady, moderate-intensity exercise. After 12 weeks, the people in the first group improved their fitness twice as much as those in the second group on average. While the findings support the benefits of high-intensity exercise, it's important to note the study participants were generally healthy with good physical function. Anyone who's had a stroke should check with their doctor before starting any exercise regimen. The study was published in the August 2024 issue of the journal Stroke. Now we're going to turn to the Harvard Women's Health Watch of November 2024. And the first section is entitled Nutritional Power Couples. Learn which foods work together to pack a healthier punch. Peanut butter and jelly, macaroni and cheese, chicken and waffles. We're all familiar with food pairings that taste great together, but many of us aren't aware that certain combinations are actually better for our bodies than eating either item by itself. That's because some foods work synergistically, meaning their joint effect is greater than the sum of their parts. Eaten together, these foods empower your body to absorb nutrients more efficiently. Other smart couplings promote satiety, the feeling of fullness that may be elusive when consuming just one choice or the other, says dietitian Nancy Oliveira, manager of the Nutrition and Wellness Service at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Thinking about grabbing a handful of, say, grapes or nuts is okay, but there might be a benefit to a little more planning, creating snack pairings or having a meal with a few components versus eating each one alone. Oliveira says, you'll get a variety of nutrients, but you may also improve the absorption of vitamins, and you might feel much more satisfied for longer. Consider these dynamic duos. The first is beans and brown rice. The tasty union may conjure memories of leaner years when you needed to fill your belly on a budget. But the fiber-filled combination also creates a complete protein source, containing all 9 amino acids we need to maintain muscle and move nutrients throughout our body. The protein and fiber in beans slows the digestion of carbohydrates in rice, keeping us fuller longer. We can derive similar effects by pairing whole wheat bread and peanut butter. Then there's spinach and citrus. Envision a refreshing salad of spinach and mandarin oranges. This blend provides the vitamin C needed to properly absorb iron, which is plentiful in spinach, but mixing any combination of citrus fruit with spinach will achieve the same effect. Another enticing iron vitamin C pairing can be found in hummus and bell peppers. Cereal and milk. This comforting breakfast staple wraps in vitamin D, which is added to most cereals, with calcium in milk. Vitamin D helps the intestines to absorb more calcium so it can enter the bloodstream, Oliveira explains. Together, the nutrients keep bones and muscles healthy and help nerves function properly. Then there's tomatoes and olive oil. Healthy fats like olive oil or avocados may improve the body's uptake of lycopene, a powerful antioxidant that can prevent cell damage implicated in cancer. In addition to tomatoes, lycopene is found in other red-hued fruits and vegetables, including watermelon, red bell peppers, and red cabbage. It appears that lycopene works better in the presence of fat. Apples and peanut butter. Spreading this fan favorite on juicy apple slices is no guilty treat. The pear powers you up with a trifecta of nutrients, fiber, protein, and healthy fats. And any type of nut butter will do. When you have those ingredients together in a meal or snack, you're more likely to feel satisfied longer than if you have the fruit alone. Protein, fiber, and fat stick around longer in the gut. Then there's turmeric, and black pepper. This duo makes a case for spicing things up. Turmeric contains the potent antioxidant curcumin, but it's very poorly absorbed in the gut. Blending it with piperine, a compound in black pepper, dramatically enhances its absorption, boosting turmeric's anti-inflammatory effect. Finally, there's salmon, broccoli, and wild rice. Aloe vera considers the combination particularly compelling since salmon and broccoli's calcium and wild rice's vitamin K are especially beneficial for bone health. Getting these bone-promoting vitamins in one meal could be great for women who have osteoporosis, he says. While pairing certain foods is an easy way to get more nutritional bang for your buck, aloe vera points out some noteworthy caveats. The way people absorb nourishment is highly individual. That means there's no guarantee your body will extract as many nutrients from a certain food pairing as, say, your sister does, or vice versa. Additionally, aloe vera cautions against framing certain food combinations as super pairings. That might limit your diet. Like if you don't have hummus on one hand, you won't eat bell peppers. You should think this is only a way to eat those foods. But if you happen to, you could benefit more. Now we're going to stick with the Harvard Women's Health Watch and turn to a section called Ask the Doctor with Dr. Tony Golan, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Women's Health Watch. The first question is, my daughter-in-law is raving about charcoal-infused toothpaste, saying it really helps whiten teeth, but is it safe? Charcoal toothpaste has recently become a trendy tooth-whitening choice, joining the ever-swelling ranks of whitening products lining store shelves. It contains activated charcoal, which is a fine powder composed of coconut shells, wood, and other natural substances oxidized under heat. Since it's abrasive, it can indeed help remove surface stains on teeth, but there's no evidence it works on stains below the enamel, limiting its effectiveness. While using charcoal on teeth is safe in small doses, you shouldn't use this type of toothpaste every day. It's too abrasive for the task, risking damage to tooth enamel, the protective outer covering of the teeth. Charcoal toothpaste may even stain teeth inadvertently when charcoal particles get caught in tiny tooth cracks or leave teeth gray or black around the edges. Also, most charcoal toothpaste don't contain fluoride, which protects your teeth against decay. You're better off opting for a standard fluoride-containing toothpaste instead of a trendy new product. Now here's a second question. Every year when the weather turns cold, my cuticles become dry and cracked. They look ghastly, but can they also harm my health? Potentially, yes. That's because the layer of clear skin forming the cuticles isn't there to look good. It serves as a barrier to hinder germs from entering your body, much like nose hair, and keeps bacteria away from new nails growing from the root. Cuticles are somewhat delicate and can be damaged when we bite or trim them, encouraging cracks and fraying. A nail infection called paronychia can result when bacteria enter the broken skin, leading to a red, swollen, painful area around the nail. If the infection isn't treated, nail health can suffer. Nails can grow abnormally, turn yellow or green, develop ridges, or even fall off. Mild nail infections can be treated at home by soaking the infected nail area in warm water for 15 minutes several times a day. If the symptoms don't improve, see your doctor. The infection may need to be drained with a tiny cut, or you may need antibiotics to clear it up. Now, here's another article from the Harvard Women's Health Watch for November 2024, and it's entitled, Is It Time for a Knee Replacement? Find out why women undergo this common surgery more often than men, and how to preserve your knee health. Back in the day, going weak in the knees meant something good. Decades later, though, it's merely a glaring sign you may need to replace your natural knee joint, the largest in your body, with a metal and plastic version. It's a growing phenomenon as the population ages and more people want to stay active as they grow older. Total knee replacement is one of the most common surgeries in the United States, performed in about 790,000 Americans every year. About 60% are women. What accounts for the sex gap? We're about 30% likelier than men to cope with arthritis in our knees, a propensity driven by factors like hormones, joint laxity, and anatomic differences between the sexes. Arthritis pain happens to be the culprit that leads to most knee replacements, whether from wear and tear osteoarthritis, inflammation-driven rheumatoid arthritis, or post-traumatic arthritis stemming from an injury to the knee joint. Ligaments in the knee can also loosen, causing the joint to bend inward or outward. Women also experience this complication more often than men, says Dr. Scott Martin, director of the Joint Preservation Service at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. While women are more vulnerable to these knee-wrecking issues, women are also more apt to jump on the problem and be evaluated for joint replacement. Men are more reluctant than women to come and get treated, Dr. Martin says. Women come in sooner and tend to be better at sticking with the treatment plan. You might have already coped with years of limitation, difficulty walking distances, climbing stairs, or getting in and out of chairs related to your knee problems. Before knee replacement treatment becomes an option, your doctor will likely require you to have tried every available non-invasive treatment. These include pain relievers, injection of medications like cortisone and hyaluronic acid, which can dampen inflammation or lubricate the joint, and physical therapy. There are some situations that might suggest it's time to consider surgery. The first is pain slows you down no matter what you've tried. You're hobbled by pain that hinders you from doing the most basic things. The effects aren't just physical. If you've tried everything else, it starts to physically, mentally, and emotionally affect you on a daily basis, Dr. Martin says. Your walking is unstable. As the day goes on, your legs may feel stiffer and weaker. Your knee may even buckle. After you've been up for 8 or 10 hours, your muscles get angry. You're feeling every step. It's not that the arthritis progressed in 6 hours, it's that the muscles are fatigued. This also raises your risk for falling. You need multiple medications to function. Getting through the day may require taking several forms of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or even prescription pain relievers. But age factors into your ability to continue this regimen indefinitely. Someone in her 40s will likely draw this strategy out for many years, while others in their 60s or 70s may be spurred by their dependence on pain relievers to go ahead with the operation. Even if you have knee problems, you might be able to delay replacement surgery while you protect your knees from further damage. Consider a less extensive operation. Same-day arthroscopic procedures enable surgeons to use a tiny camera to visualize problems inside the joint and trim away damaged tissues. Wear a knee brace. This can stabilize the knee, but the approach has drawbacks. Some people swear by them, but they don't treat the root cause of the problem, Dr. Martin says. Use topical creams or pain patches. These products can offer targeted relief without side effects common to systemic medications. Pain patches are more effective for muscular pain around the knee than pain deeper within the joint, Dr. Martin notes. Regular exercise, especially low-impact activities like swimming, biking, and walking, keeps leg muscles strong, alleviating knee strain. And very importantly, lose weight. If you already have arthritis or a knee injury, carrying extra weight can greatly accelerate the weight on the knee. Losing weight can take pressure off the joint. If you're interested in learning more about knee replacement, consult Harvard's online guide, Total Knee Replacement. This in-depth book will help you decide if knee replacement is right for you. Now, here's another article in the Harvard Women's Health Watch. It's entitled, Can't Shake That Cough? Dry hacking. Loose, deep, phlegmy, barking, chesty. A cough can sound like any of these descriptions, often more than one at a time, and these characteristics can sometimes point toward its cause. Now add another. A lingering cough. What does that tell us? Not as much as we might hope, a Harvard expert says. A natural reflex that helps keep our airways clear, the average cough, typically due to a cold or another respiratory virus, lasts 3 weeks or less, Dr. Jessica McCannon, a pulmonary critical care specialist with Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Brigham says, when a cough endures for 8 weeks or more, it's considered chronic. Only rarely is this dangerous, but it certainly can be mystifying. When people come to a lung doctor for a chronic cough, they usually hope that at the end of the first visit, they'll leave with an answer and some medication that will quickly make them feel better. Dr. McCannon says, but of all the things we care for, it's one of the most difficult. And if we don't talk about that up front, I think people will have ongoing frustration and disappointment. Indeed, be prepared for a detective hunt. Many chronic coughs have more than one contributor. So doctors don't just look to the airway or lungs to unearth the cause. Often we're thinking about top to bottom, about the sinuses, swallow function, the esophagus and stomach, in addition to the airways and lungs themselves, Dr. McCannon says. There's more than a dozen conditions that can explain a lingering cough, and these include sinus problems, bronchitis, seasonal allergies, gastroesophageal reflux or GERD, side effects from medications like ACE inhibitors, asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, interstitial lung disease, chronic lung infection, bronchiectasis, which is chronic inflammation of the tubes leading to the lungs, and rarely lung cancer. Occasionally, chronic coughs arise from very weird causes like impacted earwax. Sometimes the culprit is all too clear. Smoking, whether tobacco, marijuana, or vaping. Basically, anything going into the lungs that shouldn't be there will potentially cause a cough. It's reasonable to try over-the-counter medications to quell your cough. The choice depends on the apparent cause of the cough, so you might take cough suppressants, antihistamines, or antacids for acid reflux. But if they don't make a dent, Dr. McCannon says, it's time to see a healthcare professional. Tell your doctor what's worked and what hasn't. That can give us some clues. Certain red flags make a doctor's visit more pressing. Schedule an appointment if your lingering cough doesn't resolve after treatment with antibiotics, or if you also experience breathlessness, wheezing, chest pain, chest pressure or tightness, blood in your sputum, weight loss, or fatigue. A lingering cough with any of those things should lead you to seek care soon, Dr. McCannon says. Getting to the bottom of things will likely involve a physical exam, x-rays, and lung function testing. Your doctor may order CT imaging, although that's certainly not necessary at the threshold of 3 months unless there are other warning signs. To make your doctor's visit more fruitful, Dr. McCannon suggests one important strategy: track your cough. Note its patterns. What circumstances bring it on? Is it productive or dry? Is it worse after meals or when you're lying down? Does it intrude on sleep? She asks. Pay attention to the circumstances in which you notice. Paying attention to the circumstances in which you notice the cough can provide us with some really helpful clues. And the study concludes, most reasons for a lingering cough go beyond a cold that won't quit. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.